The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. We're just a little bit behind here this morning. Hope everybody's having a great morning. Oops. Hey, have you ever wondered where your tax money for your gasoline goes when you go and fill up at the pump? I think you'd be surprised. Well, you're probably not surprised because you know it's not going to fixing our roads.
But, we've got
the down low on that for you today. And what else we got, Aaron?
We're talking about the Oakland VA in the second hour. So for all those people that know darn well that the Veterans Administration is going sideways, we lost another veteran the other day, pushed themselves in front of a train. It's just a travesty, and I think we all know that. Well, we're going to get a little window in what it's like to work at the Oakland VA, so that ought to be kind of interesting. You're listening to We the People Radio. It seems to be a little bit different beginning every week, but We the People Radio, we also broadcast online at wethepeopleradio.us, because Bill's computer sound is still on. just one more thing we enjoy. If you want to call in, number's 530-605-4567. You're joining Aaron, Bill, and Bob this morning for the 2 hours from 8 to 10. Actually, in all of our archives are managed by Robert Exter, and big thanks to him. He takes care of the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us. And so as soon as the show is finished, the archive pops on in about an hour or so, and if you send someone that page, they can get all the information. We always include articles and video and whatever our guests send us, so that anything we refer to during the show, you can look back on and do your own research. We don't want you to just take our word for stuff. So anyway, that's our auspicious beginning.
Yeah, I think we've got a great show lined up.
I think we do, too. I think we kind of have two. We're going to somehow cram them both into 2 hours.
As usual, we're going to give you something to pray for when you go to church today.
That's actually probably true, too. So do we have Lawrence McQuillan in there?
Dr. McQuillan is standing by.
We do, and I chatted with him before we got started, and he said he likes to be called Lawrence. So instead of, was it last week when it was like, doctor? We had like four scientists on, and all we said was doctor the whole day. It was funny.
You think we have problems.
I know, really. If that's the biggest challenge we face, I guess.
Our Saturday show on Casey and I are positively healthy.
Yeah.
Now we have identical twins co-hosting. Dr. Maria
identical twin?
She has an identical twin, yes. She
sounds like.
Sorry.
She has drafted her identical twin into co-hosting the show. So.
Oh.
The only thing is, when you're listening to them, it's impossible to tell them apart.
Oh my gosh. Do they look the same?
I did not actually see
part, I think.
Just listening yesterday.
You don't know.
You never know.
You don't know. Maybe it's not.
Do you have an identical twin?
No. But I have four siblings, and we all sound the same, so I guess it doesn't matter.
I have an imaginary friend.
I knew somebody was going somewhere bad. Okay, let's go back to Dr. Lawrence McQuillan. All right, he's a senior. I'm going to kind of, there's a lot of biography on here, and I hope people do go look, because, you know, a lot of times when people speak about things on the radio, they say, oh, well, what does this guy know? You know, I read blah, blah, blah in the paper, or the Wall Street Journal, or, oh, how about our Uber source, New York Times, because they've done such good research lately.
That's the first place I go.
So just, you know, make sure we're all credentialed up here. So Lawrence McQuillan is a senior fellow and director of the Center on Entrepreneurial Innovation at the Independent Institute. He received his PhD in economics from George Mason University. That might sound familiar because we have Dr. Paul Hauser that deals with the Klamath Dams that's at George Mason. He has served as chief economist at the Illinois Policy Institute, director of business and economic studies at the Pacific Research Institute, research fellow at the Hoover Institution, and founding publisher and contributing editor of Economic Issues. He had something other, another interesting, lots of contributions to all sorts of things, including Encyclopedia Britannica, which was fun. But my favorite part, created the California Golden Fleece Award to the highest state or local spending program or regulation that fleeces California taxpayers, consumers, or businesses. I was like, that to me. Then that's the best part of the resume. So, Lawrence, after that kind of psychotic beginning there, where would you like to start on the gas tax and all the other smart growth stuff you have kind of pulled the curtain back on?
Well, good morning. It's great to be with you guys.
Hello. It was fun talking to you on the porch, but it's much better now that we're on the air.
That's right. Well, I stumbled across this just in an informal conversation with somebody, and I thought, wow, this sounds like a really interesting topic that probably a lot of people don't know is happening, and also very dangerous, I think. So in order to understand how all this works, I mean, you really have to follow the money, and every time you go and put a gallon of gas in your gas tank anywhere in the country, you pay 18.4 cents. to the federal government, and that money goes into the Federal Highway Trust Fund. And that trust fund was established all the way back in 1956 to fund the construction and repair of the interstate highway system. And but what happens with most of these government funds is that over time they become slush funds for other things. So that's what's happened with the Highway Trust Fund. And one of the things that's happened is that so-called smart growth advocates have been able to capture part of that fund to promote their, you know, lifestyle choices and political agenda and their vision for what the future of California and the world, in fact, should look like. And the way this goes on is that, well, for example, in July of 2012, the federal government and President Obama signed a bill called the Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century Act.
Oh, no.
It has a very lofty-sounding name, but it goes by MAP 21. And what this act did is it set aside $105 billion of the Highway Trust Fund. So this is tax money you paid at the pump that should go into the freeway system. But instead, $105 billion of it is being siphoned out of it and going to fund other programs, especially smart growth programs around the country. And one of the programs is right here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I live, and it's called One Bay Area Grant Program, and it's overseen by the Metropolitan Transportation Commission that kind of handles all the road construction in the San Francisco Bay Area. So $800 million of this, of your tax money that you pay at the pump is going into this One Bay Area grant program. And part of that money then is going to, local governments to purchase land to, set aside more land for what's called, you know, long-term conservation or open space preserves. So essentially when you buy a gallon of gas at any gas station in the United States, you're going to fund partially public local government land purchases in the Bay Area to expand, again, government control of land at the expense of private control of land. And it further restricts, you know, the amount of land that people can use privately for their own objectives, whether it be housing or farmland or commercial or industrial or whatever. But this gives more control than over government land, over land by government rather than private individuals. So it really plays into the whole, you know, smart growth master plan, which is to increasingly have government control over open space. And expand open space and then jam more and more people into a smaller and smaller area along mass transit corridors and what's called stack and pack housing. So it really plays into the whole vision that, you know, the automobile is evil, single family housing is evil, and what we need to do is go towards, you know, cramming everybody into high rise high-density housing along mass transit systems, and we'll all live in peace and harmony together that way.
Well, and meanwhile, we have, you know, I mean, some of our roads are in trouble. You know, some of our roads are looking really shabby. So now,
right.
You know, the president's always yammering about how, oh, we need to build our infrastructure and replace our crumbling infrastructure. That's what they say all the time. Well, that's great, but we've paid the bill. Cool. We've already paid the bill. They're just siphoning it off for their projects. And before we take a break, I just wanted to go back to the Map 21. That popped up for me here a little while ago because, like, I don't know, it's been 6 or 8 months ago, because I had somebody ask me to do some research on why there he's a transit guy. If you buy a car in Idaho or whatever, he'll bring it to you. Or when our co-host moved to Utah, he was going to take their vehicles to them. So he transports vehicles. He's not a huge company. He's a one guy, you know. But his insurance was going up astronomically. And part of that increase was due to the regulation in Map 21. It's not just money being siphoned off for smart growth. You're seeing it. Well, okay, the unseen seeing it. We're gonna watch that in small businesses. So yeah, Bill Miller here in Reading was hit by Map 21. It's like, what is this thing? I started looking at it. It's like, oh God, great.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a monumental federal smart growth thing.
Well, another thing to consider is as they buy up this property, I'm assuming that it's now state-owned property, and being state-owned property, that also takes it off the tax rolls. So I guess the rest of us pick up the difference when that all happens.
Yeah, it depends on how they use it. But yeah, nothing good is coming of this, and bottom line is the money belonged to something else. And on that happy note, we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. We will rejoin on smart growth, where your money goes, gas, taxes, and all that jazz. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. The chat room is open. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. Yeah, that's what I meant.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
Classic. All right. Welcome back. You are listening to We the People Radio. We hope you've joined us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us. The chat room is up and running. Looks like we have a handful of people in there chatting away. Sometimes we're on topic, sometimes we're not. So if you can't handle multitasking, the chat room probably isn't your best place.
Well, either way, I guarantee you
it's
we're going to get your blood flowing this morning.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's not for the faint of heart.
No, it isn't. And, you know, So Lawrence, before we forget, actually, you mentioned in your article that this is all part of the Agenda 21 plan, and oftentimes, you know, we have people who tell us that's, you know, I mean, we all know it's not fake, but we get that a lot. So how do you connect the dots on that in your research?
Well, it definitely isn't fake, and what's very ingenious about Agenda 21 is it looks so organic, it looks so locally driven, but in fact, if you look at these smart growth plans all around the world, actually, and I have looked at various plans around the world, they all share the same similar, basically three features, which is, you know, building more high-density residential housing and high-intensity commercial use, mixed use, it's called, along mass transit corridors, and setting aside more open space that's owned and managed by government and off limits to development. So the whole idea is to, you know, cram more and more people into a smaller and smaller area, force them to build up rather than out, do away as much as possible with the automobile and the single-family home with a yard that most people, I think, still consider the American dream, and then force this vision on everybody through government edicts and plans. And it really looks the same all around the world. It is remarkable. But people see this as coming from their own local government or regional government. And so it looks very, very locally driven and what the people want, but it's really being imposed in a large extent from the outside because these people kind of share the same vision about what the future should look like and, you know, the evils of the automobile and the benefits of us all living along mass transit and taking mass transit, whether we want to or not. And so now they're really controlling the levers in terms of how many roads are being built, where the roads are being built, if the roads are being built or repaired at all, if you can make the roads basically unusable through not maintaining them, of course, people aren't going to be able to drive long distances, or they're going to be, you know, it's going to be so inconvenient that they're going to want to live closer and closer to where they work. And so you can control this. If you can control the land and the roads, you can kind of control the ultimate outcome. And this is what they're doing successfully, especially in the Bay Area, where this has probably been further carried along than any place else any place else in the United States and maybe even the world.
And the people in the Bay Area really, I can't generalize, but a large number of people in the Bay Area have no clue that this is happening.
They don't, no. Again, because it looks so organic, you know, it looks so locally inspired that they don't realize this is part of a bigger vision of what the future should look like. Thankfully, I mean, in the nine-county region of the San Francisco Bay Area, I mean, there are groups in every one of these counties who are pushing back. I mean, some are more organized than others. Some are more successful than others. But they weren't able to kill the master plan, which was passed in July of this year, this summer. The Association of Bay Area Governments and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission in July passed what's called Plan Bay Area, which is basically a master plan for the development of housing and transportation going forward over the next 40 years. And, you know, they've actually determined on a map, you know, where development can happen, where it can't, where do we want to buy more land up. So this whole Highway Trust Fund program that's being used to buy up land, I mean, they know where they're going to do this. And it's already, there's circles on a map that show where they're going to do this and where they're going to expand, you know, open space at the expense of private land purchases or private land ownership. So it's very developed here in the Bay Area in terms of how far along this has gone. But thankfully, I mean, there's multiple lawsuits against it right now, and hopefully some of them will be successful at stopping this.
Well, part of your article that kind of made my hair stand up, or there were three articles, actually, we should help people with that. One's called Highway Robbery, How Your Taxes Subsidize the California Lifestyle. And that isn't just California gas tax, by the way. Plan Bay Area, Smart Growth and Sustainable Communities Hurt the Poor. That was huge. I want to make sure we make sure and hit that. And then SB1, Why Senator Steinberg's SB1 Deserves Defeat or a Veto. These plans, and it kind of moves into that idea of how it hurts the poor and the disadvantaged, because when you start looking at these sweeping developments, they're looking at piling the next, 2 million people. They expect the Bay Area to grow from 7 to 9 million people, and they expect those 2 million people to fit into 5%. Of the area. I'm like, well, that doesn't really work out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Under that master plan I talked about, Plan Bay Area, the requirement is that the additional 2 million people that are going to move into the Bay Area over the next 40 years are going to have to be housed within just 5% of the land in the Bay Area. So, of course, I mean, that's going to require more stack-and-pack housing along mass transit, which is their vision. But these areas that they've, you know, prioritized for development, they're called priority development areas, and they have a kind of a fancy name for them. But they're, almost all of them are located, or the vast majority of them are located in areas of the Bay Area that are populated by the poor, minorities, disadvantaged, seniors. So they're really targeting the poor to take their land from them. And they claim, well, we'll find another place in the Bay Area for them to live. Well, right. I mean, they probably live in these areas because they're affordable and they're close to their loved ones. They're close to support networks. They're close to where the jobs are. So they've chosen these areas for a reason. And yet now they're going to be targeted under Plan Bay Area to be basically, you know, removed from their neighborhoods and resettled somewhere else. And it's just a really dangerous idea that, you know, it almost sounds like, you know, internment camps of the past, where you're just human settlements you're creating and you're moving people around against their will. And, of course, you know, they'll use eminent domain if they need to take the land where these people are living right now and take the buildings so that they can build these new high-rise units in these so-called priority development areas. So it really is a plan that's at war with the poor when you look at it. I mean, they're really targeting the areas where these people live, and their claim, I think, is completely unbelievable that they're going to create other areas in the Bay Area where these people can be housed because, you know, when is the last time, you know, the housing has ever been adequate for low-income people in the Bay Area?
I mean, sure.
It's really an area where, you know, the wealthy can afford market-rate housing and the poor always struggle. And, you know, they've managed to carve out various areas around, you know, Oakland and the western part of San Francisco that are less expensive. But now these are exactly the areas that Pine Bay Area is targeting for future development.
And if they don't take, the thing in your article that was kind of important is that even if they don't take the land by eminent domain, because I always in the back of my mind, you know, I hear the other team, you know, well, we're not going to take their land. Well, if they don't take it, as you rightly point out, the land prices and rents will increase, pushing out tens of thousands of poor and elderly residents. So,
right. In effect,
they're being resettled whether they take their land or they just drive the rent up to a point where they can't live there anymore.
Well, yeah, but
right, yeah, exactly. And it's going to be funded, again, through, you know, a lot of tax dollars that are being funneled to this program. So it's not like private developers are buying this land on their own. I mean, this is going to be highly subsidized, purchases of land that is being financed, as I mentioned, largely by, federal highway taxes, believe it or not, are going to fund this movement of people, poor people, out of, you know, places where they've lived for, in some cases, you know, generations. And the interesting thing, too, is that, that I think so much of these projects they're going to crowd people, you know, into a smaller and smaller area and make life, you know, more difficult, more miserable for, you know, poor people that have managed, you know, to carve out in areas of the city where, you know, they feel comfortable and, you know, it is affordable for them. And now they're going to be displaced and scattered, you know, all throughout the Bay Area. And I think it's going to be unlikely that they're going to be able to afford these new units that they claim are going to be built for them.
To add to that, if they're already living in the cheapest place they can find, but they'll end up moving further away from their support groups and their jobs and so forth. And then on top of that, they want to add this vehicle mileage tax. So, you know, the more you drive, the more you pay. So, you know, what's mm-hmm. the, you know, what's the outcome of that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to your credit, San Francisco Bay Area progressives, I mean, a lot of the people on the left really did fight Plan Bay Area, and they really thought that this is really disproportionately harmful for the poor and minorities in the area, and that what we need is a plan that will disperse, future housing around the area more than concentrating just 5% of the land. So there's a lot of sympathy to fighting the smart growth, even within groups on the left.
Who's pushing it then?
How crazy these plans have gotten.
Who's pushing it then, Lawrence? If the left is fighting it, because I know that the conservative groups on the right were fighting it.
Right. Well, it's not all the left. I think it's mainly more of the left people who are sympathetic towards, you know, the poor and minorities, in particular.
I think a lot of them.
But the people who are pushing it, I mean, a lot of times it's, you know, local government officials, because they see this as, you know, greater power for them, which it is. And they can create, under SB1, they'd be able to create these sustainable communities investment authorities, which is really just the old redevelopment agencies on steroids. And they could appoint members to these authorities. So they would have much more, you know, power, local government officials. And then also all the politically connected developers, too, are for this, because they're going to get the land and they're going to get the contracts to build these new high-rise developments in this, you know, 5% of the land, and they're going to get subsidized from the federal government and the state government to do it. So there's a lot of, you know, very wealthy developers who are privately or very well-connected, powerfully situated people who are for this too and are pushing this. And then it's, you know, people that agree with the Agenda 21 vision. And there's a lot of them who really just see, you know, the automobile as destroying the climate, and we need to do something about it because of global warming. And so this is what they've, you know, devised, is this plan to get people out of their car and using mass transit, and supposedly, you know, saving the climate in the process.
And, of course, we learned last week when we played, you know, Doctor, we had all the scientists on, that, let's see, the amount of air pollution you breathe in California over a 70-year period is lower than the particulate matter you inhale from one cigarette. So less than one cigarette of particulate matter over a 70-year period, and that's, I mean, with things as horrible as they are now. So it's like, you know. Okay, we've got to take one more break here. But
does that include medical marijuana cigarettes?
Oh, man. Yeah, don't even get me started on that one.
Truly conflicted over that one.
Yeah, I want to make our population smarter and more motivated, huh? What a good idea. I really like the end of the conclusion of the highway robbery article. I thought that was just priceless. Here, Lawrence's conclusion here. Next time you hit one of those freeway potholes, be reminded that the money you paid at the pump to maintain our highways is being used to purchase land in Napa Valley so wine snobs can ride their $5,000 mountain bikes. That's how smart growth really works. And I think that's when Sally read that article and said, you got to have this guy on the radio.
They got some really nice bike lanes, though. I mean, those, they've got a bang-up job on those.
We're going to take 2 minutes, and we're going to clobber Bill with our coffee cups here, and we'll be right back with Dr. Lawrence McQuillan. We're talking about who's paying for smart growth. It's you, by the way.
Yeah, I think we all know the answer to that one.
Oh, fun song. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Yeah, the day we look for San Francisco for being saved, we're in big, big, big trouble.
Big trouble. So we're here with Dr. Lawrence McQuillan, who has written three terrific articles. I had somebody in the chat room ask where they could find those. Go to wethepeopleradio.us, and all three of them are posted, actually, down right underneath his bio. So, Highway Robbery, How Your Taxes Subsidize the California Lifestyle, Plan Bay Area, Smart Growth and Sustainable Communities Hurt the Poor, and Why Senator Steinberg's SB1 Deserves Defeat. So that's, I think that's the piece that we haven't really connected, if that's okay with you, Lawrence, is SB1.
It is, yeah.
Can you give people kind of a rundown on where it is? And for those of us who didn't follow it when it was bubbling up the first time, how likely is it and what's it going to do?
Well, I think that one's going to hit them right in the pocketbook, and I think that's going to get people involved if it ever did come to fruition. But if it did, we're just
it'll
doomed.
Be sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the way to think about Senator Steinberg's SB1 is that it's basically the financing mechanism for smart growth in California. So it's where the money's going to come from. And this bill is still in play. It was put in the inactive file at the very end of last year, but it can be recalled now any time when the legislature starts, well, tomorrow. I mean, it could be recalled tomorrow. And all it requires now is another vote, and it can go right to Governor Brown's desk. So it's really close to getting through the legislature. And I think this is actually one of the most dangerous bills in the history of the state of California,
absolutely.
Especially for property rights. Because what it would do, it would allow any city or county in California to establish what's called a Sustainable Communities Investment Authority. And what these authorities can do is establish development projects within certain geographic areas of this authority. And they can take land without making any kind of blight determination. So under the old redevelopment agencies that Governor Brown was very much opposed to, at least they had to make a separate blight determination to take land. But even with that, there was rampant property rights abuses. But under this new bill, they don't even have to make that determination. They just have to say, we want to build this project because it will reduce energy consumption or relieve traffic congestion or reduce water consumption. And it just has to reduce what's called statewide blight. So now blight is defined at a statewide level rather than like a very local community level.
Wow.
So they just have to say, this project is going to reduce traffic congestion and thereby reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And so we want to take this land to build this high-rise along this BART route, the Bay Area Rapid Transit Subway System.
And Lawrence,
and they can do it then. They can just take the land then without any separate blight determination and then build this project. And also these authorities, they can issue bonds to build these developments without voter approval. They can increase sales taxes within these geographic areas. They can increase or extract property taxes in these geographic areas. So they have just unlimited, unprecedented authority to take land and impose new taxes. I mean, this is an incredibly dangerous bill,
Lawrence,
that threatens every property owner in California.
Yeah. And now say again, who actually establishes or has the authority to form these authorities? Who would do that?
City councils or county board of supervisors.
Board of supervisors.
Or jointly, cities. A city and a county could work together to form one.
And so they would form these authorities and appoint the people on these authorities. They're not elected, and then those folks will basically have the power to implement however they see fit.
They wave the magic wand. I'd like to hear.
Yeah, they're unelected officials that would be on these authorities, and they could build projects, take land, increase sales taxes, extract property taxes from police and fire, for example, divert it over to pay off, the bonds that they can issue without voter approval to build these projects.
Yeah.
And they're little kingdoms that are going to be created.
And
little kingdoms is exactly it.
Yeah, and that's like the final solution right there. I mean, once they get going, you've got no power to stop that.
Well, I like this part here. You have 25% of the tax increment revenue in a project area must be used for affordable housing units. Well, I mean, just from what we're seeing, like in New York with the affordable housing units that they're making there, 250
square
foot family housing.
Right.
Like, oh, it's going to be awesome. Or not.
Yeah. It's incredibly dangerous. Like I said, it's kind of sitting there dormant, but it could be reactivated at any time. And Steinberg, you know, is president pro tem of the Senate, so he's, you know, very powerful. This is fortunately his last year in office, so he's turned out.
He'll just get a new crazy person. It won't be a problem.
And the governor has been very much against redevelopment agencies. As you know, he's a former mayor of Oakland. He's seen these things firsthand. He's not a fan. He thinks these things really don't work in terms of spurring investment and new development. So hopefully, if it did reach his desk, he would veto it. I'm hopeful that he would, because he does understand that these redevelopment agencies, they don't work, and they just are political land grabs and political power plays to help, you know, friends and punish enemies. I mean, the money goes just very politically connected developers is really all it does. And it actually reduces the amount of affordable housing studies show over time. So it doesn't do anything to really help the poor.
Of course.
And the governor, thankfully, he does understand this. So I'm hopeful that if this does get through the legislature, it will be vetoed. But it is dangerous, and you can rest assured that this is going to come up again, even if it, you know, gets defeated this time. Because this is part of how they plan on financing their smart growth vision for the future. And they're not going to rest. I mean, there's too many people who believe in this vision of stack and pack, and they're not going to stop until they, you know, get something like this passed.
So, Lawrence, at the end of your article there, you said that SB1 was killed in the Senate, but it sounds like it's on hold. And what are they doing? Rewriting it so that it could possibly get through the Senate to the governor's desk?
Lurking.
I mean, is it really dead or not?
It died because it was moved to the inactive file, but I don't think it's going to be modified at all. I think that Steinberg saw that he probably didn't have the governor's support, and so he is going to bring it back, I think, in his last term in office, I mean, his last year, Steinberg's last year in office. So I think he's going to try to bring it back and see if he can get it through, you know, past the governor somehow, through probably, you know, wheeling and dealing. You know, if you sign this bill, we'll do something that you really want. And that's, you know, log rolling is how legislators work. So.
Are we seeing this nutty
not
stuff?
I don't think it's going to be changed at all. I think it's just kind of dormant. It's kind of sitting there like a virus, and it's going to spring forward eventually sometime in
like
2014. The hope is that the governor will just do the right thing and veto it.
Well, do we see this other places, like around the country? I don't know how much, how wide your search was, but are there other places doing this stuff? Has anybody passed anything like this?
No, not this draconian. I mean, this is by far the most highly developed idea in terms of, you know, integrating the tax funding through the Highway Trust Fund with Plan Bay Area, and then putting on top of this, overlaying on all of this, SB1, which will finance the whole thing. It's very well integrated, although it looks from afar, you know, people don't really pay attention. It looks like a three separate or four separate bills, but they're all actually tied together in this grand vision. But now, as far as I know, I mean, San Francisco Bay Area is by far, you know, the most advanced in going down this path. There is right now a big debate in South Florida. It's called 750. It's seven counties in South Florida, right around the Miami-Dade area. And it's a 50-year plan, so that's why they call it 750, seven counties, 50 years. So it would be very similar to Palm Bay area here. But there are three counties of the seven have already backed out of the plan, and they don't have the support. So it's starting to crumble.
Yay.
And basically due to really a lot of grassroots support, grassroots opposition there. I mean, they seem to be a little bit better organized there than we were here in California. So they're having more success about pushing it back, and so far it hasn't passed. But it would be very similar to what did pass here in the Bay Area. But again, as I mentioned, I mean, there's like three or four lawsuits ongoing right now So the hope is that, you know, Plan Bay Area can be declared unconstitutional for property rights violations going forward. There's some really good groups that are heading up the legal fight against it. So, you know, fingers crossed, governor will veto SB1 and Plan Bay Area will go down and defeat as unconstitutional. I mean, that's the best thing that could come of this, but I think we all need to be vigilant because this is something that's not going to go away. They're going to try to bring this back even if they lose today.
Well, Lawrence, I think that like anything else, these bills will only pass if people don't pay attention. And I think once people realize how hard this is going to hit them in the pocketbook, that's when they're going to get active, and that's when they're going to start speaking out on it. Until you clip them with money, people don't care.
Yeah, well, you're right. And this is just the beginning. And they're going to see the property taxes going to, you know, this sustainable development, not for, you know, things that they want, which is roads, police, fire, parks, libraries. The money's going to be going and siphoned off for sustainable communities and smart growth. And I think when people's, you know, sales taxes go up and property taxes get diverted, they're going to be wise to what's really going on here, which is, you know, basically a redistribution project to politically connected people. I mean, that's how it's going to work.
And that's how it works in all the other corrupt countries that do stuff like this. And people say, oh, we should be like Europe. I mean, they've got such a great model. Well, this is kind of what it looks like. You know, and as far as the federal highway funds go, so now when we keep hearing, you know, the White House talk about how we need to build our infrastructure, blah, 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 you know, I hope our listeners hear we should stop siphoning off the money that's actually being paid to do that.
Yeah, there's plenty of money there to fix the roads if they'd use it
to
fix the roads.
And that's what we all knew, too. I mean, we've all known that the money's there. It was just fun to... It was fun that you did the research. We thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So we're in our last minute. Can you believe it? We're actually going to end better than we started. How's that? We started off a little chaotic. We're actually going to conclude properly. We want to thank you for coming on. We're going to need you to come on again.
Yes.
So please save.
I would love to.
Save our number and all that, and I'm sure you've written all sorts of other fun things. Shoot me emails on possible ideas for shows because we love having folks that have done research smarten us all up. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Lawrence J. McQuillan, PhD. It was fantastic. We learned all about smart growth and how expensive it's going to be. Ew. So thanks, Dr. McQuillan. We'll let you go have your Sunday. We're coming back. We're going to talk about the Oakland Veterans Administration. Ew. More yuckiness. We're here at We the People Radio, KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hour 2, straight ahead here at KCNR, Shasta Redding.